This afternoon, I went and stood in front of IMC, the center where I'm teaching from today. And I stood out there just right by the sidewalk, and I was content, and I just stood there and stood still, walked out and just stopped and stood there and had no real idea that I was supposed to be thinking about my talk, but otherwise I had no desires, and I just stood there. And then I got curious, and I thought, if I just stand here and look, will I see something new that I've never seen before? I've been in front of IMC most days for 20 years now. So I thought, what will I see new? So I stood there looking out at the street, and I saw, to my surprise, that the street in front of IMC is bowed. You know, asphalt street is supposed to be kind of flat in my mind. But it was bowed in the middle, higher in the middle, and the distant difference between the lowest part next to the gutter and the middle of the street was probably a foot. So it was really a big bow. And I looked at it, and I saw all the cars parked parallel to the curb. They weren't flat. They were all tipped a little bit to the side because it was curved there. So that's not very interesting news for all of you. But what was remarkable was what was revealed in a situation that I've been to many times before, that I saw something new that I'd never seen before. Something that once I saw it, I said, how could I have missed it? It's right there. It's obvious. I'll probably never look at the street again without seeing how bowed it's, mounding up in the middle. And I suppose the reason I never noticed it is I never stopped to look. I'm busy teaching, going into IMC, out of my IMC to teach people to stop and pay attention. I was too busy to stop and pay attention in that way. And, it never occurred to me to do right at that place in that way. So, I'm engaged with my life, living my life, doing what I do, and walking right by the same thing over and over again. And because I'm so involved in what I'm doing, I don't see something that's obvious right there in front of me. So this is explains a little bit what we're doing here in this practice, is that we're being still and looking. And maybe looking at something we've been living with for a lifetime. And we're becoming still in a certain kind of way, just standing there or sitting there and looking and seeing what's there. And when the occasion happens that what you're looking at is suffering, then the task is to look upon that. Stand still, be still, and gaze upon it. And if that suffering has all these extra components in it that leads it to become grief, lamentation, despair, anguish, then we start seeing, there's a lot of, I've been really attached to a certain role, a certain definition of who I am. I'm really committed. Boy, am I committed to my desires. I didn't know that there was, I'm committed to my fears or my comfort or my safety. I'm committed to my hatred and my blaming. you know, that it's so strong that it's almost like it has become who we are. Whether we've consciously taken it on as an identity, it's kind of becomes a pervasive operating mode sometimes. Oh, that's what's going on. And it can be so pervasive and so familiar that we don't even know it's there. We walk by it for 20 years because we're going somewhere else. But to stop and see, we might see two things might happen, as I'm saying here, been talking about. You might see what's happening there with greater clarity. You might see the attachment. You might see the identification that makes the whole situation fragile, the whole situation more vulnerable for being challenged, being offended, being frustrated. That seems to just like add fuel to the fire of the suffering and all this extra layers and layers on top of a simple suffering has become complicated. And then we learn that the value of being still and just looking. It's like, wow. This is a whole different way of being. It's possible to gaze upon our life and not be reactive to it or caught in it. To be the observer in a wonderful, even powerful way. And then so we see the kind of identity we've been holding on to or the attachments we have. And then we look at that, sitting still. What will it show itself? If we're still and quiet and just look. And over time, maybe we start seeing where it begins, where attachments, identity, these ideas of self that we become almost, that the arising of the construction, the rising of the thoughts, ideas, just that starts making, bringing us attachment or justify the attachment or putting the pieces together of what we have to look like and act like and talk and be. And we start seeing the beginning of it, you know, in all kinds of small ways. Someone asks you for direction on the street. And you can watch the beginning of you wanting to be, to prove, to show that you are a good direction giver. I once lived in a country where I seemed like no one would ever say that they didn't know where something was if you asked them. They'd always point in some direction. But I learned after a while that many times they were completely wrong. It was like they never wanted to say they didn't know. So it's like, sometimes they sent me in the opposite direction even, or anyway, so here we go, you know, this identity or being someone who is always the answers or knows the answers. You can watch the becoming of being a good direction giver. It can be that small, that innocence, but it can be bigger things. It can be becoming a spouse, becoming a partner. Not in some simple, ordinary way, but in ways that are quite complicated. But then we sit still. We learn not to react, not to judge, not to be critical, not to create more self, more attachments, because we see it. And then we come to the next step of condition for the arising of becoming. And the word in Pali is fuel, like firewood is a fuel, or could be also understood as the food for something that feeds something, feeds the fire. It's often translated, or it's an interpretive translation into English, that it means grasping. But I think probably a better translation is compulsion. Sometimes it's translated as clinging, but I think compulsion. It's this very strong fire of needing, wanting forcefully something to be, almost like that we have no choice. That there's a compulsion, there's a momentum to want, to be, to attain, to prove ourselves. And part of the reason I like compulsion more than grasping or clinging is that it better represents the metaphor that it's based on, that a fire that burns from the wood. I don't think fire grasps to the wood or clings to the wood, but rather there's almost like a forcefulness or momentum of how the heat, the fire, arises out of the wood. Some flames I've seen, it's almost like the flame is floating a millimeter or so above the wood. And there's this kind of force. And compulsion works also for things that are not usually associated with greed in the way that grasping is. It could be anger. It could be hostility and hate. It could be fear. Sometimes there's a strong, strong conditioning, compulsion to be afraid. It could be delusion. And this metaphor of fire also suggests that we get burned by it. The fire burns that which feeds it. So the compulsions feed the fire of attachment, the fire of becoming, the fire of greed, hatred, and delusion. And the one who has the compulsions gets burned by it. There's kind of a tension. There is agitation. There is a loss of freedom in compulsion. And it can be remarkable to sit still and just watch volcanoes within us, to watch momentum that's just flowing of greed, hatred, and delusion, of compulsion, fear. And I kind of really like this kind, these kinds of metaphor, because it's something that we can respect. We should be very respectful of fire. And it's kind of these are natural forces within us. For whatever reason, human beings were born with these compulsions, these drives, these inner fires, but to learn the art of sitting still and watching, seeing. And slowly we get to see what we haven't seen for decades. Slowly we begin this deconstruction process and we start seeing the layers of how it is. And it's discovering the fuel that feeds what's going on is so helpful, because it's now getting closer to the foundation of what's operating for us or driving us. So, for example, in this karmic discursive thought and thinking that's so easy to get caught up in, and so much self is made from it, so much attachment around it. We can watch the thoughts arise and the beginning of identity begins. And these thoughts can be so repetitive coming back and so hard to stop. And there, you know, sometimes I've wondered, looking at my mind, that probably California could produce enough electricity to light up a whole city if they just plugged into my brain. The power of these thinking. And but then to ask, you know, what's the fuel? What's the soil out of which this thinking is coming? What's feeding it? What's the upadana? What's the compulsion? What's the firewood in which it burns? And then we might discover that maybe there's underneath the compulsive thinking, there's fear. And that's the fear which is giving power to the thinking. Maybe the power, maybe the strong attempt to make ourselves safe. Or maybe it's there's a deep simmering resentment that because it's so uncomfortable, it creates this power of itself, its own momentum that is so strong, feeding these thoughts. Perhaps it's hurt. A deep sense of hurt that's never been attended to. It simmers. Perhaps it's desire. Perhaps it's loneliness. Perhaps it's confusion, not understanding what's happening. That's what keeps feeding these thoughts. And if we can see the underlying fuel, the food, the source, the firewood in which it arises, then it changes the perspective, or it gives us a new opportunity, which is now we can sit still and attend to the firewood, the fuel. And that's usually much more primary, much more important. It's kind of like if you're squeezing the toothpaste roll tube and toothpaste just keeps coming out, making a mess on the bathroom counter, you can just keep brushing it away. Brushing it away and brushing it away, but it'll keep coming until you realize that the compulsion that's making it come is your other hand squeezing on the tube. And then, oh, I guess that other hand is doing something. I'm so busy cleaning up. I'm not paying attention to my other hand. And so then we let go. And then the tube stops discharging toothpaste. So I don't know, should I apologize for a metaphor that suggests your thoughts are like toothpaste? And so what is that pressure? What's the to think? What's the tension for thinking? And what does it come with? Sometimes it's an attitude, a mood that's pervasive. Sometimes it's something deeper that's deeply embedded in our psyche, maybe in our hearts. Or then there's, so that's for thinking. But then we might be deeply involved or connected to certain emotions that are driving us and providing filters from which we see ourselves, see the world around us. And we know what it is, but it might be even the emotion, certain emotions might be the messenger. And you want to see what the message is underneath. And so, for example, that a tendency towards cynicism and criticism, seeing what's wrong everywhere. I'm just kind of making it up, but you know, maybe underneath that is an insecurity. Or underneath that, there's a hurt. A hurt that's too difficult to attend to. So we're going to recoil from it. It takes the form of then looking outwards. Or perhaps there's a discouragement. Or sometimes depression. But underneath that, maybe it could be that there's, you know, among the many possibilities, there could be anger that's never felt like it could, never, for whatever reason, has never been allowed to be seen. It's held in check. And so it kind of deflates us. So this is not meant to be analysis and guessing and searching for what the underlying fuel is, but rather to sit quietly and still and just watch. I can't underscore enough, you know, the value and the power of just sitting quietly and being content to just watch and see and look. And when the time is right, then maybe you'll ask yourself the simple question, what's the fuel for this? And rather than thinking your way to the answer, you feel your way. You feel your heart or feel what's here. And if nothing comes, don't worry about it. And sometimes the compulsions we have, the agitations we have, the preoccupations we have, or a call. I think of them as a call. Hey, you, this is where we need to be. You need to be down here where the fuel is, what's feeding it, kind of the basis out of which it's arising, the upadana. So all these forces of compulsion, of agitation, of that get stronger and stronger and get solidified into identity and attachments of different kinds. One of their consequences is that it can be hard to meditate. because it keeps us agitated. It keeps thoughts circulating and moving around. And so as we begin to see and be present for this, being still and seeing what's going on, and no longer continuing the old ways of being, we start discovering some freedom, some stillness, some peace, a new perspective of how to be with things. So we're no longer attached to suffering, preoccupied with suffering, reacting to suffering, but can be still and watch it. That's the beginning of quieting down, settling down, of letting the agitation calm down. And to have this whole new perspective, the dharmic perspective, that comes from just watching, just seeing, being present for this way. That frees up energy, it frees up capacity to be present, because the attention is not hijacked by our reactivity, and now it's available for meditation. And then as we sit there and do the practice and things settle down a little bit more and we start seeing the process of becoming and the birth, then more energy is available, more capacity is available to sit still, because our attention is not being pulled into doing, being so actively involved in the construction project of karma. And so as we begin discovering this new perspective and it brings a new kind of enthusiasm, there can be faith, enthusiasm, inspiration. Oh, there's another way. There's a whole other way. There's a whole other half of my house I didn't know existed. There's a whole other possible way of being in this world. And then to have this inspiration, and then beginning to have some of the seeing some of the good results of the practice, there can be gladness, delight. Wow, this is cool. I just saw the beginning of an identity forming. This idea that I'm going to be approved to these people. I can give directions really well. I'm a good direction giver. I just saw it arise and I let go of it. Well, isn't that pretty wonderful? Wow. And when I let go of it, I saw that I could be more present for these strangers. And I noticed they were nice people that I couldn't notice when I was so busy proving myself to them. This is cool. This is nice. So this gladness arises. And this more freedom to be here and present for the experience. And then when we start seeing that there's this fuel, the underlying source or basis, which is the compulsion for these attachments, for this way of thinking, for this way of identifying and reacting. And we can just sit and watch and look at the compulsion. Then we can... there's more attention available, more energy available for staying focused, staying present, staying concentrated. We're less likely to be derailed or caught up in our preoccupations and thoughts. It's easier just hold the course, and this ability to sit still and watch begins to be channeled into our capacity to be absorbed in what we're doing, absorbed in our attention, absorbed in what we're doing in the moment. Really entering into this world of meditation, of concentration, of unification, gathering together, everything just here with this. And this is even, you know, it's pretty wonderful to feel this kind of clarity and capacity to be absorbed and engaged and undistracted and continuous with the practice, and really not, you know, just really engaged deeply. And it does something really good to our psychophysical system to not be distracted, not be fragmented, not be distractible. It becomes kind of a wonderful momentum of focus, of attention, of absorption, that can feel really good, a lot of pleasure, that the tradition calls piti, P-I-T-I, joy. The joy of really being absorbed in what you're doing, with no resistance, no distraction, just completely here for this. And then this kind of joy is kind of like the counterpart to this fuel, this compulsion in the ordinary dependent arising, which is fuel for the fire. And the word for deep concentration is jhana, related to jayati, which can mean to burn. And here we keep seeing this metaphor of fire being used by the Buddha. But now it's a different kind of fire. It's not compulsive anymore, but it's a flow, a movement, has no compulsion, no grasping, no agitation. But it's this beautiful flow of energy within us, this flow of attention that has its own momentum. There's momentum without compulsion. That sometimes feels like the kind of momentum when you go down a slide. You get up on the top of the slide and then you sit there and you let go, and there you go. Whew. It's nice. It's like I let go into, more and more let go into the present moment. Let go into the breathing as we breathe. So we're doing something that on the surface for some people might very quickly decide is phenomenally boring. Sitting still and looking. Turns out that boredom is not innocent. We're not innocently bored because the situation around us is genuinely certifiably boring, and therefore, of course, you should be bored. We're not innocent when we're bored. Boredom is an activity of the mind. It's a doing that we're doing. And sometimes it's because we are holding ourselves apart from our experience. if we were not holding ourselves away from our experience, but really present for it, there would be no boredom. Sometimes it occurs because of fear of really being present. Whatever, you know, the boredom itself, maybe it's just the messenger for some deeper compulsion, some deeper fuel, deeper firewood that's ready to burn or is burning. And so we then turn around and use this capacity to sit still and gaze kindly upon what's happening and see, what is this boredom? What's going on here? Rather than have the boredom drive us, we put ourselves in the driver's seat and turn around and look at it and sit and watch it and see until we see more clearly what's going on. And all these ways in which we sit still to watch, just to see, to be present for, to be aware of, they are all related to the capacity to be concentrated or to be absorbed or be unified or to be stable and steady with the experience. So we're both training ourselves to see clearly, to be aware, and whether directly or indirectly, it's also a training. This training to be still, it's a training to become, enter into samadhi, enter into another way of happily, delightfully, have a kind of a warm burning, a warm comforting fire on a cold day that you sit next to us, within us. The momentum is a unification, the gathering of our energy. And when that doesn't happen, which will always happen sooner or later, the core task always is within your capacity, whatever way it's appropriate for you, to have some stillness. Look for the ability to be aware in a still way. So the awareness has a kind of soft, spacious stillness. Be still and gaze upon what's happening, that you're no longer concentrated or not getting concentrated. It might be more important to be still and look upon what's actually happening than it is to be concentrated. Don't be ahead of yourself. Be exactly where you are. And maybe you'll see it in a new way. See what you never saw before. Quietly, peacefully, without agitation, we look at how we're noisy, conflicted, and agitated. Always look for that place, still place of awareness. No matter how modest it is or feels, the best of your abilities, sit still and gaze upon everything kindly. So may your karmic fires quiet down. and maybe even become extinguished. So that a different fire can burn, the dharmic fire. And in the ancient tradition, this dharma fire is, the emphasis there is not how it can burn you, but how it provides light so that we can see. May you burn with a bright light to see this world clearly. Thank you all.